G'day, and welcome to Follow the Money, the Australia Institute's podcast demystifying the big economic issues in Australia and putting them in plain English. I'm Ebony Bennett, Deputy Director at the Institute, and at the time of recording this on Tuesday, the 28th of April, 2020, The Guardian reports that Australia has 1,112 active cases of COVID-19, 5,530 recovered cases, and a tragic 84 deaths. And now that Australia has essentially successfully squashed the curve, it's time to start thinking about our economic recovery. The government has shut down whole sections of the economy, and some are likely to stay closed, at least heavily restricted in the short term, even as we start to lift some of the limits that we currently have in place. And all of the government's spending to date, that's about $200 billion or so, is really only to get us through the next 6 months. But it's not too early to start thinking about what comes next. The Prime Minister has said that it won't be business as usual. But business has been out there promoting company tax cuts, getting rid of red tape, and weakening environmental laws to be able to rush through development approvals. So far the business response, or their recovery wish list, is pretty much indistinguishable from business as usual.
Preserve the businesses that comprise our economy, so on the other side they can bounce back strongly.
That coming out of this terrible crisis, we need a pro-growth, pro-business agenda. And
we will continue to pursue a pro-growth, pro-business, lower taxes, less regulation, less red tape agenda.
So we do need to look at ways in which we can increase wages, ways in which we can improve security at work. That's one of the reminders that we've had during this crisis.
We're not asking in the Business Council for us to have the lowest rate. We're simply asking for a competitive rate.
Tax increases are off the table because we don't want to make it harder for business to be successful. We want to deliver lower taxes because we want to make it easier.
We know that a company tax rate is more likely to see the benefits go overseas in the form of share, buybacks, increased dividends and executive salaries. There are better ways to support business, such as an investment allowance, and we encourage the government to look at that.
If you lose your job in a recession and you don't get it back in the following 2 years, you basically never work again.
But how can we judge whether or not a proposal like cutting the company tax rate stacks up? How do we know if we will have a better or worse outcome than boosting funding, for example, TAFE or aged care? Well, the Australia Institute has developed a list of design principles for the economic recovery, a way that you, me, and politicians can judge the merits of various proposals. And today I'm talking to the bloke who wrote the paper, our senior economist, Matt Grudnoff. G'day, Matt.
G'day, Ebony. How are you?
Good, thank you. So, Matt, firstly, why are we even talking about this? Won't the economy just snap back once we loosen restrictions?
Well, no, because basically the economy has taken a big hit in total demand. So unemployment's gone up. Even with JobKeeper out there, unemployment's still going to be a lot higher. Unemployed people have a lot less money, so they buy less stuff. And also consumers are going to be worried. They're going to be worried about losing their jobs, so they're not going to spend as much. And all that reduction in spending means that the economy is going to be going a lot slower for a lot longer.
And so what is the government essentially trying to do with any type of recovery package?
Well, this recession is weird. All recessions are different, but this one is particularly strange. And the reason it's particularly strange is it's almost two different recessions in one, if you like. The first recession has been caused by the government. The government, for very good health reasons, has shut the economy down. And so at this point in a normal recession, the government would be telling people, begging people to go out and spend money, go out to the cinema, go out to restaurants, go out to cafes, go out and see Australia and spend money. But they're doing the exact opposite. They're telling us all to stay at home and don't spend, basically. But once the health restrictions are lifted, we go into the second part of the crisis, and that'll be a more traditional sort of recession recovery, in that what the government will need to do is they'll need to stimulate the economy by spending money, by increasing demand within the economy, and by decreasing the amount of unemployed or increasing employment.
And so why did the Australia Institute think it it was important to design these principles in the first place?
Well, there's any number of ways to stimulate an economy. Stimulus is really just buying a lower unemployment rate and the government spending money. And the government can spend money on all kinds of things. And so there's going to be lots and lots of different projects that the government will consider. And so what we need to do is we need to essentially rate these different projects. We need to sift them and find out which ones are going to be good value for our stimulus money and which ones are going to be bad. And so this paper essentially comes up with some principles to try and rate how good a stimulus package or how effective a stimulus package will be.
So essentially it's kind of a list of benchmark criteria against which you could throw any different type of proposal and see if it ticks these various criteria and has some merit.
That's exactly right. So not all stimulus packages are going to have the same impact. And what we really want is we want to get the maximum amount of stimulus for our dollars. And this is basically a way of rating those different projects.
So using these design principles that you've come up with, can you just walk us through each principle and why it's important?
Yeah, sure. So the first one is about timeliness. When a crisis hits, when demand falls, it's important that the stimulus happens quickly. If you wait too long, all you do is create a bigger problem that's going to require even more stimulus later on.
So a bunch of governments did that during the GFC, obviously, and that's why timeliness is important.
That's right. Treasury called it go hard, go early, go households. And the go early was important. It was important that they stimulate the economy early rather than later. The other thing is the size of the stimulus is important. It needs to match the fall in aggregate demand, in total demand in the economy. If the government undercooks the stimulus, all it will mean is a higher rate of unemployment, a deeper recession, and a slower recovery. So the size of the stimulus is important.
So that's go hard and go early. What does go households mean?
Well, the go households means is about who you give the stimulus spending to. So it's important to consider who's going to get the stimulus money, because stimulus only works if it gets spent. So if we give $100 million to low-income households, people on welfare benefits, for example, these people live paycheck to paycheck. They don't have a lot of money. They need all that they can just to buy the essentials. They're going to go out and they're going to spend the whole $100 million. They're unlikely to save almost any of it. So it'll all get spent. If you gave the same $100 million instead of low-income households to the wealthy, they're far more likely to save some of it, a large chunk of it. And so stimulus that's saved isn't spent and doesn't lower unemployment. So who we give the stimulus to is important. It's the same if the government wants to employ directly. So if the government employs people to do something, then we know 100% of the money is going out and being used and is going to lower the unemployment rate. So it's really about what economists call the marginal propensity to consume. It's basically how much will be saved and how much will be spent. And if we're looking at the most effective form of stimulus, we want the maximum amount spent, not saved.
And so that's why you target households, so to speak, but also why it's better even still to target lower income households, because basically they by necessity have to spend nearly everything that comes in their paycheck.
And that's exactly right. And when the government was handing out $750 checks to welfare recipients, you can expect that almost all of that $750 would be spent. But also they sent out a lot of money to businesses, and this is where it gets a bit problematic. If you're a business and you've just seen the amount of stuff you're selling, your customers are leaving, the amount of stuff you're selling is going down, and the government gives you a grant of money, or the government gives you the opportunity to write something off in tax if you buy some new equipment, you're actually less likely as a business to want to spend that money, and therefore it being effective stimulus. And the reason you're less likely to spend that money is because you've just seen demand for your product decrease. You're going to be worried about your cash flow. Rather than spend the grant, or rather than buy the new equipment, you're going to save your money and see what happens going forward to your cash flow. So the reason you go households is because households, particularly low-income households, are going to spend, whereas businesses are more likely to hang on to the money.
The next principle is about targeting domestic production. Why is that important?
Well, that's important in the same way that saving doesn't stimulate the economy. Buying imports doesn't stimulate our economy. It might stimulate an economy somewhere else in the world, but it certainly doesn't stimulate our economy. So if the government spends money on stuff that is then bought overseas, all that ends up happening is the money flows overseas, it doesn't circulate in the local economy, and it doesn't lower our unemployment rate. So when the government's thinking about what sort of stimulus projects it should do, it should think about the kind of projects that target domestic production, that target stuff that's made and used in Australia.
The next principle is about targeting activities with high direct employment intensities. What does that mean, employment intensities?
Yeah, it's a bit of jargon, a bit of economic jargon, but basically it means that if you give $100 million to the mining industry and you give $100 million to, say, the aged care industry, you will get very different employment outcomes. The mining industry is what economists call capital intensive. That is, it uses a lot of very large, very expensive machines. And so, therefore, an increase of $100 million in the mining industry will flow less, less people will be employed than other industries, particularly the aged care industry. The aged care industry, on the other hand, right, it employs lots and lots of people, and a lot of that $100 million will go into employment. So when the government's thinking about stimulus projects, it should think about projects that have that target things that employ a lot of people, not things that are highly capital intensive.
So basically, it goes back to that original argument that you were talking about. Government spending should be buying a lower rate of unemployment. Therefore, you want the most jobs for your buck.
Yeah, exactly right. All stimulus really is doing is buying a lower rate of unemployment. It's trying to increase growth, economic growth, so that we don't have as much unemployment. And anything that takes away from that, things like savings, things like imports, things like giving to industries that don't employ a lot of people or are very capital intensive, then that's going to decrease the effectiveness of that stimulus.
I'll come back to why that's important, but let's just finish off these criteria first. So the next one is targeting those who are most impacted by the crisis. That one's fairly straightforward, but walk us through that.
This is not just an equity issue. If you have a lot of people who have a particular skill set that have been laid off, then the idea is you should target stimulus package towards those sort of people because their jobs or their skills are being wasted. They're otherwise going to be unemployed. If, on the other hand, you targeted people who haven't been particularly badly impacted by the crisis, you risk basically overstimulating a particular industry that then struggles to meet that demand. So imagine that we were targeting at the moment, if you were to have projects that targeted areas that have been badly hit, like tourism areas. If you targeted those tourism areas, you're going to find lots of people that are unemployed in those areas. And so you're going to have this workforce ready and to go. And so the stimulus package is likely to employ more people. But if you targeted areas or people that weren't impacted and were already employed, then you have basically less of a labour pool to be able to take up your projects.
The next one is the criteria is that the spending should target useful projects that deliver co-benefits. What do you mean by co-benefits?
Yeah, so the primary purpose of stimulus is to buy a lower unemployment rate. But if you're going to spend billions of dollars, and let's face it, the government is going to spend billions and billions of dollars to kickstart this economy. It's going to happen. What we also need to consider is what other kind of benefits we can get from that. There's no point spending billions and billions of dollars and having nothing at the end. So when we're considering stimulus projects, we want to target things we want more of. We want to target the kind of stuff that is going to make our society better into the future. A really classic example of that in New South Wales was about 90 years ago during the Great Depression in the early 1930s. As part of an employment project, basically a project to get people employed during this horrible depression, They constructed the ocean bars, a lot of the ocean bars around Sydney and New South Wales. Now, those bars have been used for almost 90 years now. People have got benefit from them long after the employment benefit was gone. There's a good example of where you can target co-benefits, other benefits from your stimulus spending that's going to help people into the future. And so co-benefits can be all kinds of things. So, for example, areas hit hard because of a lack of tourism, perhaps have national parks. We could be employing people to put better access for walks through parks and things like that. After the recession is long gone, those tracks will still be being used by people. People will still be able to walk through them and get a benefit from them.
Some international examples that I can think of for that are in the New Deal that Roosevelt instituted after the Great Depression in the United States. That built things like the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco, Hoover Dam. It also raised, I think, 9 out of 10 rural households out of having no access to electricity to all of them having access to electricity, 9 in 10. And in the UK, the National Health Service, the NHS, came out of the post-war period, which means everyone got access to healthcare. Those would be examples of co-benefits?
Exactly right. So what they do is long after the economic crisis they were created to solve, long after people, the original people got the benefit of that employment, other people are still getting benefits from it. Now, remember that the government is going to spend tens of billions of dollars. We want to get the maximum amount of benefit from that. And it doesn't just have to be employment. It's absolutely important that the primary goal of stimulus is to lower the unemployment rate. We need to increase employment with our stimulus, but we should also be thinking about these other benefits because they're the things that we're going to remember. They're the things that are going to benefit for years to come, long after the crisis is gone.
And then the final principle is that it should target regional disadvantage. Why is that important?
Yeah, that's similar to the individual principle. And basically, again, it's about targeting regions that are disproportionately impacted by the crisis. So if there's a region that's been put down or has been affected more than other regions, then it's going to have a larger rate of unemployment. Not only is it good to help those kind of regions because they've been badly impacted, but it also means that they're going to have a pool of skilled workers that are ready to work. And if you target projects within those, you're going to be able to employ people rather than targeting regions that have got less unemployed people and therefore can absorb these projects less effectively.
So using this criteria, let's just take company tax cuts because they appear to be at the top of the list for business. How does a proposal like cutting the company tax rate stack up against this criteria?
Well, they stack up very poorly. And the reason for that is that they are not targeted at households. They're targeted at businesses. And the benefit is likely to flow overseas to overseas holders because of dividend imputation. They're likely to be particularly slow. So if you cut taxes now, company tax is based on profit. A lot of businesses are not going to be making a profit over the next year, and so therefore they're not going to be paying much tax anyway, company tax anyway. So the benefit, the extra spending, if you like, or the extra demand that they might create is going to be tiny. Businesses are going to be worried, so they're not likely to spend it. If it goes out in additional dividends, it'll flow overseas, so it's not going to stimulate Australia. It's not going to target particular regions. It's going to be spread across the entire economy. And as far as co-benefits go, well, there's no real co-benefit from a lower company tax rate. There'll be nothing at the end of it that we'll be able to point back to in sort of 20 years' time and say, look, that was created because of stimulus spending. So it performs very poorly.
You've talked a lot about the reason for stimulus spending and the primary goal of it is to buy a lower rate of unemployment. Just to finish up, can you tell us why that is so important? Why is reducing unemployment the primary goal here?
Well, the reason we're not going to have a bounce back is because demand, total demand in the economy is going to be lower. And it's going to be lower because we're going to have more unemployed people who are going to have less income. The higher you can keep employment, that is, the smaller the unemployment rate increases by, then the more demand you are going to have within your economy. And the more demand you have within your economy, it means that more people are going to need to be employed, which is going to create more income, which is going to continue the recovery. So it's that increase in unemployment is the primary, an important part of why demand is decreasing in the economy. And it essentially traps us in a recession. The other important thing is unemployment makes people worried. So even if you don't lose your job, if unemployment goes up to 10%, you're going to know people who have become unemployed. You're going to see it on the news every day that there's going to be lots of unemployed people out there. And you're going to think, if I lose my job right now, the chances of me getting another job are really small. So what are you going to do? Well, you're going to try and save as much of your income as you can. Just in case something goes wrong, you've got a buffer. And in doing so, if everybody saves, then that's going to create less demand in the economy and is actually going to create more unemployment. So it not only is high unemployment reduces demand directly in the economy, but it makes other people worried, which then further reduces demand in the economy.
And lastly, I mean, Richard often talks about the fact that he came into the workforce just as the 90s recession was hitting. And the impacts of unemployment can last for quite a long time and have quite a detrimental effect on people's lives in the long term too.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the big problems with recessions is that there is a whole cohort of people who will become unemployed, who will never work again. They're likely, during the 1990s recession, that cohort was mainly men in their 50s. And essentially, they lost their job, they were unemployed throughout the recession, and then when the recovery came along, firms weren't interested in hiring older workers that they had to retrain. They were more interested in hiring other people. And so not only is that miserable and horrible for the individuals and their families that these workers never worked again, it's also a massive loss of their skills, of their abilities. It's detrimental to the amount of stuff that Australia can make. Recessions are horrible from a social standpoint. They're horrible from an economic standpoint. They're the things we need to avoid or reduce as much as we possibly can. And that's really why it's really important that the government doesn't undercook the stimulus when the restrictions are lifted. It is vital that the government throws everything at this to restart the economy as fast as possible, because what we don't want is a prolonged stagnation or depression in the economy, because that will be awful at every level, at a social level, at an economic level, at an individual level.
Thank you, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
This has been a special episode of Follow the Money, and we're aiming to bring you shorter but more frequent episodes during the pandemic, so stay tuned. Please check out the Australia Institute's Economics of a Pandemic webinar series at our website, tai.org.au. The next event is tomorrow, Wednesday the 29th of April at 11 a.m, and it's also about what happens after the crisis and why snapback isn't really going to cut it. And that's with our special guest, the Shadow Treasurer, Jim Chalmers. It's free, but registration is essential. And the following day at 6 a.m, bright and early, we've got a breakfast webinar with our special international guest and Nobel Prize laureate economist, Professor Joseph Stiglitz, along with ALP President Wayne Swan. We hope you can join us for that too. For the latest health information, please check health.gov.au or listen to the ABC's excellent CoronaCast podcast, which comes out daily. This episode was recorded on Tuesday, the 28th of April, 2020, and things may have changed since recording. You can visit tai.org.au for all our latest research and content, including Matt Grudenoff's paper on the design principles for fiscal response. We're on Twitter at the Oz Institute with an AUS. My Twitter handle is Ebony_Bennett with a double N double T. Matt Grudenoff is at Matt Grudenoff, that's GRUDNOFF. And this episode was produced by Jennifer Macy with production help from Lucy Law. Our theme music is by Jonathan McFeet from Pulse and Thrum, and you can find more of his music at pulseandthrum.com. Stay home, stay safe, and thanks for listening.